Commodore Hour is on the air. Over the next hour, we'll discuss the latest around Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield. By Regions. Get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit Regions.com/anchordown to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers. Built Ford tough. Commodore Hour starts now.
Welcome into tonight's edition of the Commodore Hour. Andrew Aldergretic here with Kevin Ingram. Coming up tonight, our weekly conversations with Jerry Stackhouse and Shea Ralph, plus a conversation focusing on the 50th anniversary of Title IX with one of our deputy athletic directors, Christine Kelly, and our director of marketing, Alyssa Leonard. All that Vanderbilt is doing to honor the 50th anniversary of Title IX throughout the course of the entire year. If you've not seen it, you can go to vucommodores.com, and right at the very top is a bunch of information about the celebrations and acknowledgments that Vanderbilt is doing, not just right now, but throughout the entire calendar season, all the way through football and basketball next season. But let's focus, Kev, on basketball right now. Just got back after a trip from Tennessee, taking on the Vols, plus number one Auburn is coming up on Wednesday. What is the mood of the team right now, and then a really tough test against Auburn coming up?
Yeah, I think the game on Saturday, that was the one this group really wanted going in. If you heard some of the comments of the players, like these guys hadn't experienced beating Tennessee, the old rival, during their career. So went to Knoxville, you know, and as we'll hear from Coach Jerry Stackhouse, I think he felt like the intensity at the beginning of the game out of Vanderbilt's guys wasn't quite where he wanted it to be. And heard some of the players say the same thing. But Vanderbilt did a good job in the second half. They were down by 16. It looked like Tennessee might be starting to slip away a little bit. Commodores went on a 17-2 run, cut it all the way down to one, and then Tennessee, they scored some points and stretched it out again. Then Vanderbilt made another little run. Key turning point in the game, about 4 minutes or so to go. Scottie Pippen Jr. scored a bucket, got fouled, a chance with a free throw to cut the lead to one. Free throw didn't go, and then he was called for a foul on the play that ensued, and it felt like that was a big momentum changer in the game. Tennessee did a really good job on the offensive glass, giving itself multiple chances. They had 15 offensive rebounds and scored 17 second chance points. Those were big numbers in this game. Vanderbilt played some really good defense, I thought, throughout a whole lot of the ball game on Saturday. Came up short by 9 points. A little two-game win streak comes to an end after Vanderbilt had beat Missouri and LSU before that. But now you go back on the road and play another tough one coming up on Wednesday.
I was going to say, right, so you sort of feel like you're in this position where every game is gettable. And as we know, Arkansas beat Auburn recently, and Vanderbilt beat Arkansas. So transitive property says every game is gettable.
No question.
For sure. Going into this one, what's going to be important for Vanderbilt?
I think Auburn presents some really tough matchups. Again, maybe to back up a little bit, one of the biggest problems about going to Auburn is facing the crowd at Auburn. This will be the most cranked up place we go, I would say. We played some tough road places. Scoring a win at Arkansas to start SEC play was really impressive. You know, we've been to Georgia, we've been to Florida and South Carolina, Kentucky and Tennessee in the SEC. Played some tough road games in non-conference, SMU and Pitt, went out to Hawaii. But this one, it feels like the crowd is going to be like right on top of you. You watch these games at Auburn, it's wild, and the students are loud and crazy. And I think if you're a basketball player and talking to some of our guys, I think they relish going into those environments and kind of hearing all that. Everybody on your back. And, you know, I think that would be a lot of fun. I always thought as a player that would be a lot of fun to go in and experience that sort of thing. But then there's a team you have to play as well. And Auburn is certainly a team capable of winning the whole deal when March gets here. You just look at the way their season has gone. And they had to stumble against Arkansas the other night. And that was the first game they had lost in SEC play. Their only previous loss was a multiple overtime game against UConn, a double overtime game they lost way back in November. So they went from November 24th until February 8th without a loss, and they play some great basketball. This is a really good team that Bruce Pearl has. Jabari Smith, really talented freshman, just a tough matchup. He can shoot from the outside. He's 6'10", averaging 15-8. Wendell Green Jr., a transfer from Eastern Kentucky, really good point guard, 123 assists and 58 turnovers. Those are numbers you like. And Walker Kessler is coming off a triple-double. He had 12 blocks in their win back on Saturday. So he's another transfer from North Carolina, averaging 11 points and 8 rebounds. He has 116 blocks. That's first in the SEC, and I believe this is still true. If you take second place and third place and add them together, they're still short of 116. So this is a tough matchup.
That's a remarkable number. It's a truly ridiculous statistic. So you've got the old basketball-baseball crossover coming up, which is always fun. Of course, you've got the Auburn game on Wednesday night. You've got the home game on Saturday for men's hoops. But in between that, we've got ourselves first pitch for the 2022 season for Vanderbilt baseball. And it is one heck of a matchup to start things off. It is a, depending on where you look, top 10 matchup between Vanderbilt's and an old friend, Coach Holiday, with Oklahoma State. And they've got a good squad, won 36 games last year, made it to the Tucson Regional. So the Arizona Regional didn't play the Wildcats, but made it there. And it's going to be a heck of a matchup. They've got a second-team All-American in Justin Campbell that plays for them. They've got some transfers that come in with gaudy offensive statistics. But I would go right back to what Coach Corbin has said. Yes, Vanderbilt has a difficult matchup to start things off, but guess who also does? Oklahoma State, right? They've got a difficult matchup in what Vanderbilt brings back. So we are looking forward to first pitch on Friday at 4:30. You'll have the SEC Network Plus call. I'll be on the radio.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Just looking forward to starting the season. And you don't know how this first series is going to go. Don't even necessarily know how the pitching or those sorts of things are going to stack up, but you find out those things as you go along. And this isn't tippy-toeing in against an opponent that everybody looks at and said, oh yeah, you'll have no trouble. This is one of the best teams and best programs in the country, a traditional power in Oklahoma State. And yeah, they have some really good players coming back. Jake Thompson had one of the best seasons in conference play in the Big 12 last season. He hit almost 400 in conference play. Mentioned a couple pre-conference, all-conference type performers. Nolan McLean's another one. He had a couple good performances against Vanderbilt when we did the series out in Stillwater last year. So this will be a lot of fun to see a lot of veteran guys coming back for Vanderbilt as far as the position players. Some questions to be answered among the pitching, but you start to answer those this weekend.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the depth, the Big 12 of the SEC, there's no doubt, but Oklahoma State is considered right there at the top of the league. Texas is the favorite, and they might be the favorite in the entire country, Texas might be, but that is good depth, good players, good quality baseball out there in the Big 12. So we're looking forward to it. A couple of promotional notes. As always, you can get tickets for baseball games on VUCommodores.com. If you are among the first handful of folks through the door at 2 p.m. on Friday, you can get a Vandy Boys beanie, which might be weather appropriate. We'll find out at some point.
Wait, I have a question about that item. You call that a beanie?
Yes. Okay. So I've heard a lot of different terms.
Right, right.
For me, it's very much a beanie. What are some of the other terms?
Well, a toboggan.
Toboggan.
I understand a toboggan is a sled.
But for me, it's a sled.
Toboggan is also a hat.
Yes.
And I guess up north, maybe north of the border, they call it a toque. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, a toque, a toboggan, or a beanie. It'll be the same product regardless of your verbiage, but they will be available for a select number of people. I get thrown off. Toboggan, very much a sled for me. Mm-hmm. Like we get the snowstorms and you go down the sled in a toboggan.
Like you and Corbs from the Northeast, it'd be a beanie.
Yes, perhaps
if it was Cooper Davis, it'd probably be a toque, right?
And if you go to our website, it says beanie. So
okay, right.
So perhaps somebody who wrote that is, I don't know, from that part of the country as well. Looking forward to all of it. Okay, we'll step aside, come back in just a couple of seconds. We'll have head coach Jerry Stackhouse of men's basketball first. A conversation regarding Title IX with one of our deputy athletic directors, Christine Kelly, and director of marketing, Alyssa Leonard, and then we'll finish things off with the head coach of women's basketball, Shea Ralph, as we continue on the Commodore Hour.
We're back on Commodore Hour and time to visit with head coach Jerry Stackhouse. Vanderbilt went 1-1 last week, a victory over Missouri on Tuesday, then a 73-64 loss at Tennessee on Saturday. I guess, coach, let's start with the one on Saturday. That one a little harder to shake off for the guys, just knowing how much everybody wanted to win that one.
No, it shouldn't be hard to shake off. Again, we didn't do the things that we needed to. We played a great second half, but we didn't play a great first half. I mean, that's a team that you come out and give them confidence and allow their energy to outmatch our energy. I thought that was the difference in the game, really. Everybody think it's the end of the game and the plays that you make there. And that's, there's some truth to that. I mean, you got to have You know, I heard last night, you know, watching the Super Bowl, you know, Sean McVay talked about competitive greatness, you know, being your best when your best is required. And I think those, you have those moments late in games for sure, but you have those moments early in games that can be the difference. So hopefully we can learn to, you know, start a little bit better, you know, not, you know, we finally win a jump ball and then we throw the ball away on the first play of the game. You know, it's just a careless play that we're better than that. You know, making a bounce pass to a 7-footer just shows that our head wasn't in the game. Early on, we eventually got into the game, which is good. But, you know, starting a little bit sooner, having that sense of urgency, especially as we come down the stretch, where, I mean, we're playing for something. So it shouldn't be those type of things that we're talking about after the game. And those, you know, and those were the things that we talked about in our film session. Obviously, there were some positives for sure, but that was a negative that we got to try to correct soon.
The offensive rebounds they were able to get made it tough, but overall pleased with your half-court defense. You got some stops, held them without a field goal, say, the last 3 minutes of the game. There were some definitely some good things on the defensive end in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I just thinking finding that balance. I thought our guys, you know, they were, you know, I thought they were coming over our backs a little bit. And then when our guys got a little bit more aggressive to get them off the boards, and they were called for cheap fouls, for boxing out. So it's just, again, those just the things that you deal with when you go on the road, but you still can do enough things over the course of the game to overcome that. But, you know, we did a much better job. They, I think in their, you know, in their losses, they're right around, you know, 20, you know, they're around 21, 23 points, you know, in second chance points and points off of turnovers. We gave them 21 in the first half, right? And then only 8 in the second half. So, you know, we were so much better in controlling the boards and not, you know, and taking care of the ball and making sure that we got shots and then allow them to get into transition early and really, you know, wearing on them on our with our half court defense. But I think that's the again, the 21 was the problem. If we could hold them to 8 in the second half, then we should be able to hold them to less than that in the first half. It was really tough for them to score against us if it wasn't for those, you know, second chance points and points in transition.
It's Scotty's ability to draw fouls almost an art form. I mean, he is so good at drawing the contact, you know, situations would look like he might have to pass and then getting to the free throw line.
Well, yeah, some of them he should pass, but a lot of them is, you know, where he's just had the craftiness and the ability to get guys up in the air. He has great footwork, you know, in the paint. I think sometimes that he gets stuck, that we could help him by cutting more. A lot of guys are just hanging on the perimeter with the hands up, like, find me, find me. We could, you know, really help him and maybe get ourselves some easy opportunities. I think I remember one, Rodney. He got stuck kind of on the post. Rodney cut back door and got to the foul line. You know? So I think those are things where we can help him. But he's really good at, you know, at drawing fouls and they're fouls. You know, I mean, I know people talk about you know, in social media and different platforms or whatnot about his fouls, you know, the percentage of fouls and all that, but they're fouls. Yeah. You know, and I mean, I think they, you know, they even with that, they miss some. So, but no, he has a great knack of, you know, getting in the paint, obviously having the handle and the body control to get there, and then being able to use head fakes, ball fakes to get guys out of position and make them foul him.
He's got some good post moves too for, say, a guard his size. You know, he can get down there and kind of slither around, and as you talk about, you know, get the shots away. It's really impressive when you get him posted up against somebody down there sometimes.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he has that ability, especially guard, you know, with the guys that's guarding him. It's not only, you know, smaller guards, point guards. He has the ability to take advantage of that. I just think, you know, he has to read the situation sometimes. I think with him and Jordan, guys that we like to post, you know, our perimeter guys that we like to post, sometimes it's just patience and, you know, okay, yeah, I got a mismatch. The other team knows that it's a mismatch too, and they're probably going to try to do something to adjust to that. So I think that's, it's huge for us to try to figure out is, it probably, even though I got the mismatch, it probably won't be me to make the shot. We got to get more of a mentality of, you know, waiting and letting and baiting and letting teams. Yeah, there's sometimes when you can catch it really, really deep and that you can go quick and get something good. But a lot of times when you're trying to use that crab dribble or Barkley dribble, as some like to call it, and getting, you know, getting a little bit deeper in the paint, they're going to make a run. Then there's an opportunity to make a play, you know, to your teammate to get a great look, you know. So I think those are things that we have to learn to be better at, you know, just having patience once we get some of those mismatches we like, knowing that it might not be the shot for me, but it'd be a great look for my teammate.
Coach Jerry Stackhouse is our guest. Miles Studi was terrific at Tennessee, hit 5 threes and scored 17. How much have you seen his game and confidence grow this season, not just shooting, but on both ends of the floor?
Miles does a great thing for us. That's it. I mean, he has to be better at rebounding the ball on both sides. I mean, I think his defense is gotten better, but I think just, you know, going and hitting and keeping other guys off the board. Most in our league, a lot of guys that don't get a lot of plays drawn up for them are usually at that four spot, you know, and he's kind of an exception. I mean, we're playing team, you know, coming up here against Auburn, who has another, you know, four man that does get plays called for him, but a lot of those guys don't. So they have to make their living by going and trying to get them off, you know, offensive rebounds and getting them in transition and such. So it's important for him to, you know, even though that he's making shots, that he's, you know, putting bodies, you know, on his man, keeping him off the board. And when he does a good job at that, we're normally, you know, pretty good. I mean, we are our half-court defense, you know, is stout, but, you know, it all depends on getting the, you know, the defensive rebound. You play, you know, good defense for 20-some-odd seconds, and then all of a sudden they, you know, somebody slides off of a box out, and then you, you know, reset to 20. You know, that's, you know, that just, it's deflating. So, yeah. You know, I think that's where he's, you know, just has to be better there, you know, in areas rebounding the basketball for us, both offensively and defensively. But what he brings to our offensive firepower with his ability to stretch the floor and, you know, just be a threat on the perimeter is definitely a big plus for us.
We're visiting with Coach Jerry Stackhouse, and we will have more of Commodore Hour next on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Welcome back. We continue our Monday night visit with head coach Jerry Stackhouse here on Commodore Hour, and we look ahead to what's coming up. Auburn on Wednesday, Texas A&M coming up on Saturday at Memorial Gym. I want to step back, though, to last week real quick. The other game was the Missouri game and a nice win at home. We talked about the balance and really steadying things to get that win after Missouri made their run. Those are traits you're really looking for in this team, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think we had those same we were in the same similar situation against Tennessee, again, with 7 minutes to go. And it's not, here's the game in the balance, man. Let's just lock down and do the things that we need to do defensively, even though, yeah, everybody's maybe a little tired, a little fatigued, a little mental fatigue right now. Let's just lock down and get through that and do the things. And we did that in that Missouri game. Yeah, it was good balance. You know, nobody really just, you know, had a big game. Sometimes guys get it going and they're going to have a, you know, 20, maybe 30 point game. You know, Scotty has those games sometimes, and then that we may not have as great a balance as you know, I wouldn't even say that we like, but we do like to have that type of balance, because now everybody is more, it's a lot easier to get guys, you know, engaged and playing defense whenever they feel involved on the offensive end. So, and I think the ball is always going to gravitate to the best player. So if we have that mentality, especially starting early in games, to drive it and kick it and swing it and get a great look. You know, those are the things that we talk about, you know, like, and Miles has been the culprit of that sometimes. Yeah. You know, like he early in games he gets a good look, you know, and it's a good shot for him, but there's opportunities for him to make that extra pass, you know, to get someone a great look. And those are just the things that we want to, you know, work on early in the game. After he's made a couple, you know, within the offense, and he gets that same look maybe later on in the game, Yeah, shoot it, you know. That, but I think just for us, just the ball has energy when it's popping like that. It's fun to play. It's fun to watch, and we can almost create energy by just having that kind of 0.5 mentality. I got the ball. When I catch it, I got 0.5 to do something with it. Yeah. Shoot it, you know, move it or drive it. And, you know, good things normally happen for us when we do that. And when we, you know, in our pick and rolls, when we play with our big, we can find our way to get that ball into the pocket to them, not necessarily for them to make plays for themselves all the time. But, you know, we got really good passers and Q, Jermaine, Liam, you know, T. Frank, all those guys can make plays out of that pocket. So it's important that we get the ball to them, you know, kind of collapse the defense, and our numbers are off the charts when we're able to do that.
Now it's Auburn. They have the look of a team that could win a national championship. They have great size. They play fast. Jabari Smith, Walker Kessler, man, they're really tough matchups. What's the most challenging part about facing that group?
I just think their rim protection. I think Walker Kessler had like 12 blocks or something crazy last game. So it's just about going in there. Not that we can't attack the basket, which we can, but we have to go in there and really have a plan. We need to play off of 2 feet. You know, utilize our pump fakes. I mean, because not only him, they got other guys that like to jump and jumping shots as well. So I think there's going to be opportunities for us to make maybe some late passes, you know, to the perimeter, make some late passes around the basket, but it's just about not getting sped up. I mean, those guys really get into you, you know, on the perimeter. So we got to be strong with the ball, you know, not be careless and give them easy opportunities, because we do feel like, you know, we can guard them. You know, we can guard them in the half court, you know, but where they hurt you is second chance points and, you know, their defense creating opportunities for them in transition. So that's where, again, pretty much the same MO of a Tennessee, right? We got to find a way to get shots on the board so we can have, you know, good balance in transition. But, you know, and take care of the ball. You know, they throw in a little press from time to time. They play a little bit of zone. They mix it up. We just got to be prepared to play good offense and deal with, you know, the, you know, Kessler. He's going to be back. So, I mean, there's some things that we'll work on over the next couple of days to try to, you know, take advantage of him being back and really trying to protect the rim. But more so than anything, just coming out and competing and having a level of attention to detail and focus, you know, for 40 minutes. You know, now we can't come out and, you know, ease into the game the way that we did in Knoxville. We got to come out from, you know, from the beginning of the game, from the tip, you know, with a sense of urgency and try to maintain that. We're realistic. You know, you're not going to play at the highest level for 40 minutes. You're going to have some lulls during the course of the game, but it's important that those first early minutes of the first half and really to start the second half that we come out with some urgency.
You touched on this a little bit earlier. There is still a lot to play for, isn't there, for this team? You got 3 weeks left of the regular season, can still finish in the upper half of the league, can still make a run at postseason. How do you look at those things and maybe approach those things with the team?
I just like to look at it as, you know, possession by possession.
Yeah.
I think you can't get too caught up into looking too far ahead and thinking about this. I mean, this is new for our guys. We hadn't been in a situation to where we were playing for, you know, for much at this point in the season before, and in the past couple of years. So being in this position is great, but it's not something that you necessarily, you know, have to speak on and talk about too
right.
much. You know, just and create kind of a tightness that you don't need. You want to play loose. You want to just do your job. You know, and again, I think we've taken a lot of the guesswork out of it for our guys. You know, we play to our strengths, and which is normally taking the lower percentage for the other teams, you know, and trying to make them do things that are low percentage plays for them. So just execute and do those things. And then when we do that, you know, good things happen for us. So it's not, they're all of our guys, they live, you know, in the real world. So they're on social media and they hear all the things. And, you know, and obviously for people that cover us and different things. They haven't had these things to talk about in a while, so there's gonna be some of that. So we got to manage that, but more so, I just like for us to think about controlling with what's in our realm, what's controlling what's in those 94 feet, and doing what we know how to do. If we do that, I think you're gonna have some valleys, but if you're able to control the valleys, then the hills will take care of themselves. And so that's our approach.
All right, one last one. It's a Valentine's Day question. Who was the one teammate you loved playing with the most? And I think I may know the answer to this one.
One teammate I love playing with the most. I don't know. I mean, probably that's a tough one, man. I mean, I love playing with Ben Wallace, when I was in Detroit. He was great rim protector. Again, you could make a mistake on the perimeter and he'd have your back. He was a great rebounder and, didn't think about his offense so much. So once he got the offensive rebound, he was throwing it right back to me. So he was fun to play with. Dirk Nowitzki was one of my favorite teammates. Feel like, a guy that every time you throw him the ball, something good is probably going to happen with it. It has a great chance. Jason Terry, I've had some good ones. Grant Hill, he was fun to play with, before he, left Detroit and signed with Orlando. We had some great chemistry on the court. So I had some good ones.
I was thinking you were going to say Rasheed Wallace, going back to your days.
That was definitely in college. Yeah, in college. When you look at college, from that standpoint, I put Jeff McInnes in there too.
Yeah,
I mean, probably nobody threw a lob pass better than Jeff. I mean, it was always. We played together, and some AAU stuff, played together in high school, played together in college. And, man, he put that thing right up there in the right place. So I think, him and she, us coming in as freshmen, they're definitely up there as guys that I love to play with as well.
Coach, always enjoy our conversations. Thanks for the time.
I appreciate you, man. Happy Valentine's Day.
All right, you too. It's Coach Jerry Stackhouse. We'll have more of Commodore Hour after this on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back to the Commodore Hour tonight on ESPN 94.9 Plus. As always, available streaming for free on the VU Commodores app. So a good conversation with Kev and head coach Jerry Stackhouse. Coming up shortly, we'll talk things over with head coach Shea Ralph of the women's basketball program. But right now, we want to zone in on Title IX and the celebration here at Vanderbilt throughout the course of the entire season. It is the 50th anniversary of Title IX, and we're pleased to welcome a couple of guests to the show here tonight. First, one of our deputy athletic directors, Christine Kelly, as well as our director of marketing, Alyssa Leonard. Christine, I want to start with the 30,000-foot stuff, the big picture stuff. Why was this important for Vanderbilt? What about this place made you guys want to put together a 50th anniversary celebration in the way that you have?
So thank you for having me today, Andrew. And I think what's important, Alyssa nor I would be in this room today without Title IX. While I wasn't born before the passage of Title IX in 1972, I was actually right at the end, a 1979 baby here, I still completely benefited from that. And when you sit and you think about our first female athletic director at Vanderbilt being Dr. Candace Story Lee, who is our vice chancellor for university affairs and our athletic director, that in itself to me speaks volumes as to why we should celebrate Title IX. So I'm excited about everything that we have planned, and I will not sit here and take credit for anything such as that, because Alyssa has done a magnificent job just with our website. If you haven't checked it out, shameless plug, vucommodores.com and Title IX, you will see all of the things that Alyssa and that team has put together. And if I must say, we've actually done a better job than a lot of other peer institutions.
Now, the website for sure has been fantastic. Again, right on vucommodores.com at the very top, there's a bunch of information about what Vanderbilt is doing. So Alyssa, I turn to you. Take me back to the beginning of the planning. How did it come together, and what have you guys wanted to do throughout the course of, again, not just January, February, March, throughout the entire calendar year? How did this all come together for you on the marketing side?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andrew. So it actually started when Christine brought to me the opportunity to be Vanderbilt's person on the larger SEC committee. The SEC itself is also doing a year-long celebration, and they wanted one representative from each school to kind of just be part of that collaborative discussion. Where and how can we do similar things? Where and how can we share ideas and all that sort of stuff? And so when we started talking about what it was going to look like for Vanderbilt, we started talking about putting a committee together to make sure that all of our teams, all of our areas, everyone really felt represented. So we have representatives from both men's and women's sports here at Vanderbilt. We have representation from various areas, including development, our Learfield team, communications, campus partners. You know, you can really kind of go on and on about all the different collaborative pieces that we have. And so we kind of have taken it in a month by month approach. And so if you, when you visit our website, you can see that each month has a theme to it. And so January was all about educating. You know, a lot of people don't know Title IX's only been around for 50 years. Do they even know what it truly means? And so we wanted to start off with that. February, we're collaborating with Black History Month and, you know, sharing about some of our female pioneers in sports in general, not just at Vanderbilt, but other places. And so that's kind of been our step-by-step approach to it. And so we're still building a lot of our ideas and events as the year's going on, but fans can see where and how each month it's going to be celebrated and really culminated in January with a larger celebration.
No, and it's been interesting to see all of the things that you guys have been able to do just at least through a month and a half so far. Talking with Alyssa Leonard, our director of marketing here at Vanderbilt, as well as one of our deputy athletic directors, Christine Kelly. And Christine, you're also the sport administrator for women's basketball. And I've kind of made this point a couple of different times, so people have may have heard me say it before, but it's always been interesting to me to see the rise of women's basketball within college athletic departments. It was not an NCAA sport until the early 80s. It was AIAW that oversaw women's basketball right after Title IX, mid-70s, late-70s, as most of the college athletic departments started their women's basketball programs. So to go from that status to where we are now, it's a very impressive and remarkable rise for women's basketball in the grand scheme of college athletics.
Absolutely. And you have to give credit to, you know, the late, great Pat Summitt and for all that she's meant to women's basketball. When you think about it for a second, no one ever wanted to coach women's sport. That just never happened. But then you look at the likes of Ajino Ariyama and the success he's had at UConn, and he's kind of made it where men now want to coach women. It's like, oh, wait, I can make just as much money coaching women. I can still have the same positive notoriety. I can send women to the professional ranks. But again, to your point, we're talking right at 40 years. Because if I'm not mistaken, it was 1982 when the NCAA, and if you read the history books, they talk about there was a takeover, and I put that in air quotes, a takeover of the AIAW, and then that ended up being the merging of the, you know, that one championship into the one model of the NCAA. But you're exactly right. It's only been about 40 years, and the amount of success that has come, but you can't say that without the names of Tara Vanderveer, without the names of C. Vivian Stringer, without Pat Summitt. There's so many people that have really worked so hard to really advance the game of women's basketball over the last 40 years.
All right, Alyssa, so I'll leave you on this one. You've given us what's going to happen throughout the course of the year as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of Title IX here at Vanderbilt. But for what is coming up immediately, what's next for fans to check out here at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, so at some of our upcoming events, if you're going to be in attendance, you'll see some of our stories being shared about, you know, as I mentioned earlier, February, we're in Black History Month right now. And so another committee on our campus, we're working on all sorts of projects, is working on spearheading some unsung heroes in terms of, you know, some of the Black employees that we have in our athletics department. And so we'll be sharing some of those stories of the females who are considered our unsung heroes. We'll be playing some of those videos in our venues and celebrating them. We've been, you know, putting up some facts and figures of Black History Month from Vanderbilt, you know, from our history, sharing them with people, because I don't think our stories are told enough. You can never tell the stories of our past enough. And, you know, for me, I've been here less than a year, and I'm still learning a lot about our future. And so it's been a really fun project in that way. But all of our sports at some point throughout the next 12 months, we'll have one game designated to celebrating Title IX. And so we got a specific logo designed for Vanderbilt to really kind of mark everything that we're doing. And throughout those games, you know, we will be hosting various different panel discussions that fans can go on and listen to. we'll be telling stories, we'll be providing giveaway items for people to just kind of show that support for 50 years of Title IX. The next game that we'll be celebrating Title IX at will be our women's lacrosse game upcoming. And so we have a few different initiatives surrounding women's lacrosse, whether it's just celebrating Title IX next weekend versus our game versus Notre Dame. And then also, lacrosse has a really large foundation in the One Love Foundation that really hits the entire lacrosse community about a young woman who was murdered, who was a lacrosse player. And so we've really poured some resources and some thoughts into how we're going to celebrate that. So those are some of the things that, you know, fans can see coming up soon. But another shameless plug, on our website, we do have a forum where fans can participate and share some information with us about what can we do better? How can we educate you more? How can we make things more engaging? Those types of things. So feel free to send us a response on there if you're interested in learning more about what we're going to be doing.
Alyssa Leonard, our director of marketing, Christine Kelly, one of our deputy athletic directors and specifically oversees women's basketball here at Vanderbilt. Thank you so much for being here. We'll step aside, come back on the Commodore Hour in just a couple of seconds. Continue our conversation as well around Title IX with the women's basketball head coach, Shea Ralph, after this on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Welcome back to tonight's edition of the Commodore Hour. Andrew Allegretti here with the women's basketball head coach, Shea Ralph. A lot to cover with you here tonight, but I do want to start with this. You guys are coming back from a trip to Knoxville, and you made a point with your team to stop by the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. There's a lot we could get into here in terms of, and we'll touch on this, your mother's relationship with Pat Summitt, so on and so forth, but just the big question first is, why was that a point of emphasis? Why did you want to take your group there to experience the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, a lot of them, we had talked a little bit about some things they had and hadn't done since they'd been here, and most of them had not been there. And it tells a really cool history of the sport of basketball as it relates to females and where it started, who started it, the challenges that they faced, the rule changes, all kinds of names and stories, and the way that it's laid out is extremely interesting. And we had our own little tour. They told stories. We watched videos. So it was very interactive. And then we do trivia before every game, depending on the state that we're in, or it's pretty fun. You know, we have Vanderbilt kids, so they love that kind of thing. But it was neat because they retained a lot of information. So the trivia went really well the next morning. But I think anytime you can learn about the path that's been laid before you and the people that did it for you, and what they came away with, I think, was it wasn't that long ago that women face some significant challenges as it relates to playing the sport of basketball. And then, you know, we had some really cool things where Coco Nelson on our staff and myself, UConn versus Notre Dame, and, yes, and there were some videos, and that was fun for them to jab at both of us. And then a couple of our players saw their jerseys hanging in the Hall of Fame because they were state champions in their high school. So, you know, there was a really neat kind of personal touch to it as well.
So from that, you talk about, and I've said this point before, and if people have listened to other stuff, perhaps they've heard me say this. I'm not sure people quite understand the ascension of women's basketball over the past, I guess, 40 to 50 years at this point. Mm-hmm. And to be blunt, your mother is part of that narrative. The Title IX Act was passed in 1972, I believe. And in 1973, your mom was on a team with Pat Summitt that became the first collection of women to represent their nation in an international tournament. How much did your mother talk about that? How was that integrated to your youth growing up, the accomplishments that your mom was able to make, both as someone that represented her country on an international stage, but also becoming North Carolina's first All-American?
I don't remember ever a time that she didn't talk about it, because I started playing basketball at such a young age, and my mom and I just really bonded and connected over that. But I played a lot of different sports, but I always loved basketball. It was my passion. So so she would tell stories. She had a bunch of things hanging in our house, her medal, some pins that she shared, pictures of herself. We found some old video, which was fun because I would make fun of her about how she just stood in the middle of the 2-3 zone. But the stories were really neat, especially the stories of when she went to Russia to play, the people that she met, the food that she ate. I do remember that she never talked about what she didn't have. Hmm. So she just shared how cool the experience was for her, and the people that she met, the way that they selected her for the team. And among those people, obviously, was Pat Summitt. But, you know, in relation to her college experience, it was that she had 4 coaches in 4 years. I knew that she wasn't on scholarship. But it was never – it didn't ever feel like a contentious or a conversation that was like, well, I didn't have all the things that you have. I think she just loved to share her passion for it. And then she would be excited when, you know, I had opportunities that she didn't have. And then she would talk about how far the game has come. And I think that speaks volumes about, first of all, who my mom is. But second of all, probably I would think that most of the women that laid the groundwork feel the same way. They knew what they were up against. They wanted to play also, and they were thankful and grateful for their opportunities. But to see the way the sport has grown has touched their hearts, and I think they understand how much they had to do with it, which is really neat. And to have someone in my family that did that and understands that makes it even more special.
Talking with head coach Shea Ralph, I bring up Title IX. I bring up the stories in part because Vanderbilt is in the midst of a year-long celebration of the 50th anniversary of Title IX. And if folks have not seen it, you can go to VUCommodores.com. Right at the top of the page, there's a ton of information. Each month sort of has a theme, and there's different activities at particular games. So certainly encourage folks to go check that out. Again, in college athletics, we have these conversations often about, oh, such and such matchup happened 100 years ago or 60 years ago or whatever it is. Women's basketball was not an NCAA sport at the start. It was AIAW.
Yes.
Whatever. And eventually it gets changed over, I guess, late 70s, early
yes.
80s to
mm-hmm.
an NCAA sport. Mm-hmm. And the ascension of women's basketball and the impact that it's made in college athletic departments is rapid. There's no doubt about that. Before I get you out of here, just a couple of quick questions about your team. You've got a good game coming up against Kentucky on Thursday. Just first, give me a sense of the week that was, the biggest takeaways for you guys, the points of emphasis with your crew?
Yeah, you know, obviously it hasn't been an easy couple of weeks. We don't ever go out there to play to lose or expecting to lose, and that's been great in terms of our change of our expectations this year. We expect to win. We understand the grind of our season. We understand the grind of our conference. And obviously going into Tennessee, the rivalry that exists, they're a ranked team, and right now we aren't, but we aspire to be. And so we felt like we could go in there and compete if we played our best game, our A game. And I do believe we went in and played much better than we played in our last couple of losses. I thought our effort was much more consistent. I was happy with the way we were able to turn them over. But there were a couple things that are really hard to overcome. And in order to beat a team like Tennessee and like a lot of teams in our conference, you got to make shots. So we were getting open shots that we didn't make. And then there was a period of time in the second half where our offense was too rushed. We were taking shots that we shouldn't have taken that early in the shot clock. And it hurt us. The second thing is we got crushed on the boards. Hmm. They out-rebounded us by 20. That's really hard to overcome on the road. And last but certainly not least, they shot 20 free throws. They made 15. We lost by 14, and we shot 6. So when the fouls are 19-9,
it's
another
tricky
thing that's hard to overcome. So I think you just have to, for us, taking away the fact that I felt like our effort and our identity was much more consistent in this game. It's a loss, and that still stinks. But I felt like we were much more on the right track than we had been the last couple of games. And I told them that in the locker room. This is definitely something to build on as we go to Kentucky.
Again, Kentucky coming up on Thursday should be a good matchup. You guys won that first game 65-57, a really competitive game here at Memorial. Of course, Ryan Howard is their quote-unquote star, scored 25 points in that game. Brené Alexander Xander was fantastic. 26 in that first game. Best of luck against Kentucky coming up
on
Thursday.
Thank you so much.
We'll step aside, come back in just a couple of seconds, wrap up the Commodore Hour after this.
Inside the U.S. Bank Studios tonight to close out our Commodore Hour. Thanks once again to everybody who sat down with Andrew and Kevin to contribute to tonight's show. Lots of great conversations. And a special thanks to everybody contributing to the show tonight. Busy week upcoming for Vanderbilt Athletics. As you see schedule on Wednesday, we'll have basketball. At Auburn, should be a tough test for Jerry Stackhouse's squad. That'll be an 8 p.m. tip-off Central Time, and we'll be on the air at 7:30 for pregame coverage. And then a very busy weekend as well. Of course, basketball in action on Saturday. And then the Vandy boys get their season rolling as well coming up on Friday from Hawkins Field opening series against Oklahoma State. Heard Andrew talking a little bit about it. Should be a good one between the Commodores and Cowboys. A good opening test for this Vanderbilt team ranked in the top five in most preseason polls. But now it's time for the work to be done for Tim Corbin's squad to try and earn their spot in Omaha for another season. That'll just about do it for us here on the Commodore Hour. Thanks once again to all of you for spending your Monday with us. We hope you'll join us for all the programming coming up throughout this week. Once again, basketball in action, baseball in action. Should be a fun week, a busy week here on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. For all of us, I'm Gus Wedekamp saying good night and go Doors.